Honey, I blew up the business.
Welcome to the podcast, Charlie Redding. Great to have you on the podcast. Great to see you.
Great to be here, Dan. Looking forward to it.
Yeah, me too. Well, I've got to say, it's a real treat for everybody to have you here because Charlie has got such a CV. He's a serial entrepreneur, but he's also a serial author and a public speaker and a podcast host and an ultra athlete. What's all that about? And on top of that, he's a thoroughly good guy. And so I'm really excited to speak to you, Charlie. And we're going to be getting onto his new book, Entrepreneurial Happiness, a little bit later into the conversation. But before we get to that, I just want to start with going right back, Charlie, to your early days. And I hope you could just tell us a little bit about your Uncle Bill.
Yeah, it's a good place to start, actually, because so I grew up on a farm and, you know, family farm. So actually, I was growing up in an entrepreneurial environment, but with total lack of awareness as to that's what it was. So it just completely passed me by and went off to uni, did agriculture, didn't particularly thrive other than in the pub. and then came back, started working on the farm, realized it really wasn't for me and just kind of didn't know what to do. I got a degree in agriculture, but just realized I didn't want to farm. So I thought, well, I'll just run away and clear off around the world. So I went off around the world and I started in South Africa, landed in Perth as the start of my Australian leg, and an Uncle Bill collected me at the airport. Now, I'd never met Uncle Bill before. I think he's my mum's cousin, I think. But he'd settled out in Perth many, many years before and picked me up off the curb outside Perth Airport, and whisked us off. And he took me on a bit of a tour as to, you know, these amazing properties that he'd developed and then sold. And then we ended up back at his house, and we were kind of looking over Kalgoorlie Bay, which is where he would typically swim every morning, and, you know, watching the sunset, drinking a kind of Margaret River Cabernet Sauv or something like that. And you've got this incredible house, and it's full of all of these ornaments and art, things that he picked up from his travels. And I was chatting to him about it. I said, you know, Bill, how is it that you've got all of these incredible things from around the world, and yet you've also got this incredible business? And he said, well, Charlie, I'll try a really bad Aussie accent, but hey, here we go. Hey, Charlie, I run my own business, so I make the rules. He said, I take 3 months of every year off, and I travel around Australia and I travel around the world. I was like, 3 months? You can't, you know, surely once you've got a job, there's a rule against that. You're kind of limited to 25 days holiday. Ah, well, Charlie, says, if you work for somebody else, they make the rules. You work for yourself, you make the rules. And I'm like, this was like a seed growing in my mind as I kind of went around the rest of Australia, New Zealand, Indonesia, Southeast Asia. And when I came back, I kind of fell into the world of financial services entirely by mistake. And actually, mainly because I was sold on the principle of being self-employed. So I went into a sales, self-employed, commission-only, basically a cold calling environment where they gave you a week sales training, a week training as to what a pension is. And then it was like, right, off you go. And there's no way I would have accepted that opportunity had I A, not been around the world and seen kind of expanded my horizons, but had Uncle Bill not sowed that seed. And I suppose just to kind of finish that loop off. So Uncle Bill, I saw as this amazingly successful guy. You know, he was traveling 3 months of the year around Australia. He was big into his diving. You know, he was doing all of these incredible trips. He'd got this amazing business that had created this incredible lifestyle for him, and, you know, this amazing house. And then a few short years later, I heard that he committed suicide, taken his own life. And it completely shattered that illusion as to what was, you know, what I'd got him on this pedestal as the kind of perfect entrepreneur, and yet something had clearly gone awry. And I suppose the person I often think is in was in a similar situation, clearly on a different level, but the one that people tend to be able to resonate with is Robin Williams. You know, Robin Williams was an incredible actor in terms of from his comedy. You know, he had an incredible TV series that was, you know, Morecambe and Mindy, incredibly successful, won all of the awards. Then he went on to films and he was incredibly successful in those. Then he went on and won an Oscar for not being funny. The one thing that that was his thing, and he won an Oscar for a film that he wasn't even funny in. So he mastered the science of achievement beautifully. You know, he achieved everything he could have wanted and more. But as Tony Robbins would talk about, he didn't master the art of fulfillment. And that is why Robin Williams, very sadly, again, he took his own life, because he was never, ever happy despite achieving all of the things that he wanted to. And so I think that that's kind of where entrepreneurial happiness was born out of. It's this spark around, you know, yes, entrepreneurial happiness is about having a successful business and making lots of money. And it's about having that work-life balance that clearly Uncle Bill had. But it's also about enjoying the business and enjoying life and being happy and actually succeeding in that art of fulfillment. Because only really if you get all of those three pillars in place can you say that you have achieved entrepreneurial happiness, in my mind.
Interesting. So what year was it that you met Uncle Bill?
It was 1999.
And you were traveling. So how old were you at that point?
21, I think I was.
Okay, yeah. So you're kind of this whippersnapper, and you've kind of gone out into the big wide world. You've sort of cut ties with your education, perhaps your family business kind of thing, that industry in which you've come out of. And you've landed in Australia with this glamorous chap taking you around, showing you the how he's made it. So what was your kind of, how did that make you feel though, when you kind of got the news about Uncle Bill? How did you feel?
I felt like there had been some illusion shattered. You know, I had him in my mind as the perfect entrepreneur, and I've never been brave enough, because it's not a side of the family that I really know. So that his relatives that are in the UK, I don't know them. So I've never felt appropriate to go and probe as to what happened there. I understand it was, you know, business problems, but I don't know any more detail. But it just made me think that it isn't all about the money and the work-life balance. And let's be honest, most entrepreneurs, you know, a lot of entrepreneurs only get the money bit right. You know, they make good money, but they definitely don't get, you know, I've got a lot of clients that work every hour that God sends. And I fell into that mistake for many years. And maybe that's something we'll come back to. So, you know, the work-life balance and the money are clearly, you know, and money I only think of just as kind of like a scorecard. It's a measure of success, isn't it? But it's got to be that art of fulfillment, that the fun element of your life within your business has got to play a key part as well, I believe.
Okay, so I think just picking up on a thread you mentioned there, your kind of experiences as an entrepreneur. So you're 21. You've been away, you've come back, and you're in this kind of sales environment where you're throwing yourself up. You're up for it, up for this entrepreneurial challenge to kind of live by your wits. So what happened in the sort of that decade after you kind of got back from your travels?
Well, I fell into a business that, as I said, it was a very salesy, testosterone-fueled atmosphere. I can only describe it as being a bit like a scene from The Wolf of Wall Street, if you've seen the film. So it was all, you know, pinstripe suit, white shirt, sell, sell, sell. And there was a guy within that, the guy that ran at the floor of our business, a guy called Bigsy. And on a Friday, he'd be doing a sales meeting and, you know, you will sell more. I don't care whether you're selling to your mum or your gran or your, you know, a complete stranger. You guys will sell more or you're out of here is the type of message that we would be getting in that Friday meeting. And I remember, you know, I did that for about a year within that environment. And I'd got a mate at the time, a guy called Matt, who was always the trendiest guy in the office. He was the only one with orange pinstripes to his suit. And chatting to him, and it was like, well, you know, I've really enjoyed helping people save for their future, protect their money, protect their family, kind of make more of what they're doing. And yet, why is it all we ever hear about is shoveling products down people's throats? And so Matt, I, and a few others left that environment and joined the largest firm of independent financial advisors in the country at the time, because we felt that, you know, if we were giving independent advice rather than selling one company's products, that would be kind of where, you know, that was the next step and was the kind of better way of giving the, you know, best service that we could to clients. And it felt like that for a while. And then we started, or I started to realize that really, actually, all we were still doing was shoveling products down people's throats. And it was just being done on an independent basis across the whole market, as opposed to tied to one company's products. And so in 2006, I decided that the only way I could do better financial planning and to do the best financial planning possible, having tried to do it within this big company, still self-employed, still bringing, you know, so still looking after my own clients, but under the banner of this bigger company, decided that the only way I could do it was to set up my own business. So I joined a network which kind of took care of things, some of the sort of regulatory stuff and the compliance stuff, and then set up Efficient Portfolio. And it's kind of grown from there, really. And, you know, when you're setting up your own business, you've got to put in loads of hours, haven't you, as I'm sure you know. So I did that, and I fell into all the mistakes that everybody else makes in terms of just throwing more and more and more hours in. And then a couple of things happened, actually. So I was already, when I set up Efficient Portfolio, I was introduced to David Batchelor, who was setting up a thing called the Business Development Network, which essentially were like a gathering of financial planners. And it was just a day, a quarter working on the business. And so that really started to open my eyes as to how financial planning could be done better and better. And the other thing it opened my eyes to was reading, because I, being dyslexic, I'm a horribly slow reader. And it just takes me forever to get through a physical book. But at this Business Development Network, David was giving us a book a quarter and saying, right, next quarter we'll be talking about this book as part of the network. I'm like, I can't read a book a quarter. This is going to kill me. So out of pure desperation, I discovered audiobooks. And from that point on, I've just been a voracious consumer of books. And I read about a book a week and have done for probably pretty much since that day, actually. I probably read more now, but, or listen to more, because I train a lot more and I tend to listen to books when I'm on the bike or running. So that was a key part. And then David Batchelor became the UK coach for Strategic Coach. Obviously the program that Dan Sullivan founded, who you've interviewed, and obviously you're a part of Strategic Coach, so you know that well. And so because Strategic Coach no longer involved having to fly to Toronto every quarter, which I couldn't squeeze into a busy diary, I joined up with Strategic Coach. Strategic Coach massively helped me on the business side of things. But I just threw more and more hours at it. I set up other businesses in addition to Efficient Portfolio, set up a serviced office business. And it was just taking every hour that God sent. And then I went on to Unleash the Power Within with Tony Robbins and had, just a life-changing experience. So I don't know whether you want me to dive into that now or whether you want to dive it off.
No, I think it's a great time. It's interesting because I can relate very much to some of the themes you're talking about as in my entrepreneurial career, where you kind of get something goes well, so you get excited and do some other stuff too, like set up another company and do another thing. And you kind of start believing your own hype somewhat, but also believing the sort of general hype that more is more. And you think you can just throw more of yourself at it and that's going to pay off. So I've had an insight into exactly that. And that didn't work for me as a strategy, through various burnout incidents I've had. But I want to take you to, that Tony Robbins event. So April 2011, I believe. So that's about 5 years after setting up Efficient Portfolio. Can you tell me about Fat Single Loser Charlie Because I'm interested to hear that.
So, everybody that knows Unleash the Power Within knows that it's made most famous by the firewalk. So you walk across burning hot coals. I was there with Carol, my wife, who was extremely skeptical about going. She thought I'd persuade her to join the occult when we first arrived, and everybody's on the chairs dancing. And he's like, what, you know, very traditionally British. We're sitting there, arms crossed, going, what on earth have we let ourselves in for here? But actually, it wasn't the firewalk. The firewalk is on the first night of a four-day event. So the firewalk is almost setting you up to be able to succeed at what he then has in store for you. And on the third night, they do a thing called the Dickens process, which gets his name from the Christmas carols. So he's essentially taking you back in time and forward in time. And so he makes you look at the decisions that you've been making over the last few years, understand what your limiting beliefs are today, and then portray them forward. And so I'm looking at myself going, you know, I'm 3 stone overweight. I'm in the worst shape I've ever been in. And at home, I've got a business that's going well, but not amazingly well. And then I've got a wife and 2 children, but I'm working every hour. God said, literally at that point in my life, I was working 9 to 5 or probably 8 to 5 on efficient portfolio, coming home, having tea with the family, putting the girls to bed. Then I was going to work on the serviced office business until midnight. Mm-hmm. And that was pretty much every day. I kind of did what Tony said, Matt, what's 20 years time going to look like based on the decisions you're making today? And all I could create in my mind was me sitting in this one bedroom flat surrounded by pizza boxes. Carol and the girls had left me. I weighed 20 stone, my guts hanging over the side of the chair. The business has long since folded. And I was like, if that's what I'm on track for, that I don't want that. And so I made some massive decisions. When you're at an event like that, it's so easy to get super stoked up and go, I'm going to do all of these things and then not do them. But partly because Carol and I did it together, we were both on the same wavelength. And partly because the power of what he does is he creates that image in your mind, that 20 years from now image, so clearly that he gives you leverage. I mean, Tony uses a saying or an explanation where he says, look, if I asked you to give up smoking, you'd say, well, it's difficult. I tried before. It's not so easy. I'm not saying you smoke, but he said, you know, if I put a gun to your head and said, give up smoking, how difficult is it now? It's all about leverage. Mm. And that's what he gives you is leverage. And so I left with leverage. And I completely changed my approach to life. I stopped working stupid hours. I spent way more time getting fit and healthy. You know, at that point, as I say, I was 3 stone heavier than I am today. And I went from that to getting into cycling, to then getting into triathlons, and then doing now Ironman and ultra running as well. So, yeah. And also, just to kind of finish that circle, having 3 months of the year off. So I have the 3 months of the year off. I have my fitness and my health, and the business is just growing from strength to strength. So it absolutely is possible.
Yeah, that's fascinating. And what I love about that is it's this sort of inverse of perhaps what often you're told to do as an entrepreneur. You know, the idea of a vision of the future is often this sort of, you know, rainbows and clouds and cash is sort of the picture. But really what you had there was this negative imprint, which was the kick up their backside, the gun to your head. And I would like to clarify to everybody that Charlie does not have a belly overhanging his trousers at this point. He's very good at working out. But so I think that's really interesting. And the other thing that's kind of interesting is the role of health in that. And this is something that is very much an important part of your life now. And I want to get onto your podcast a little bit later. But just can you just talk around the health and well-being and fitness and why that was so important as a part of the vision that came to you? Expand on that.
Yeah, because I really linked the fact that if I wanted to live out the best life I possibly could with my wife and daughters, I'd got to be in the best shape I possibly could be. I think Arianna Huffington in her book Thrive kind of talks about it really well, in that, you know, everybody used to think that success was all about power and money. Actually, it's also about well-being, because it's no good getting to this point in your life where you've got loads of power and loads of money, but you're in a crappy position and, you know, you don't have the health and well-being to do anything with it. And in fact, I often talk about it with regards to retirement. I spend a lot of time talking about retirement, and I always say that, you know, a dream retirement is about having enough money to sleep at night, enough purpose to get up in the morning, enough health and well-being to be able to enjoy the day. And, you know, really, that's what Tony did for me. He gave me leverage to say, this is why it's really, really important. And then the fourth day of UPW is all about giving you the strategies to actually improve your health. Now, I don't follow it to the letter what Tony talked about then. In fact, actually, Tony doesn't even follow to the letter what he talked about back in 2011. His approach to health and well-being has evolved. But it sparked an interest. And probably what really sparked the interest was he sends you away from UPW with a 2-week detox challenge. So give up caffeine, give up gluten, give up dairy, give up alcohol. So you do this 2 weeks, and he says, right, at the end of 2 weeks, you decide whether you want to do this. And after 2 weeks, Carol and I had lost a chunk of weight, because you kind of just deflate from all of the rubbish that was in there anyway. But we lost a load of weight. But more importantly, we felt amazing. We were feeling better in the morning. You know, I didn't drink much coffee. I probably drank 1 or 2 cups of coffee a day. But after about 4 days of cutting out caffeine, I was getting thumping headaches. I was like, this is a drug withdrawal. You know, I'd never realized it was making any impact. But by 14 days' time, my clarity in the morning, like I could not train or do sport in the morning. I tried playing squash in the morning, and we ended up taking coffee onto the court because we were just so hopeless. The quality of our squash at 7 o'clock in the morning, which is not even early by my standards today, but at 7 o'clock in the morning, my squash was awful. Whereas at 7 o'clock in the evening, it was fine. But by the end of that 2 weeks, that was starting to change. And my ability to train in the morning, which is now when I do all of my training, because the early part of the day for me is like gold dust now. It's so powerful what you do with the start of your day, it just transformed the way I felt, and then that compelled me to carry on doing it. And basically what I did in the end, and I talk about this in Entrepreneur Happiness, because I know we referred to it just before we started recording, but I just created simple rules. You know, the more complicated you try and police your life through, the less likely you are to carry it out. So I just basically said, I'm going to live by Tony's recommendations 5 days a week, and 2 days a week, I'm going to do whatever the hell I like. I'll eat and drink and do whatever I want. But 5 days a week, I'll stick to this approach. And I've been doing that pretty much for 10 years now. And it's kept me in incredible health.
That's great. It's funny, the rules concept I really enjoyed in the book, and I think that's something I'm going to steal from you. And what's interesting, again, being an entrepreneur, when you are your own boss, you don't have anybody telling you not to do things. You know, you've got enough rope to hang yourself, as it were. You're kind of like really, you need that guidance, I think, and you need that framework. You need those limitations to channel the energy that you have. And I think the thing that's interesting in what you're saying is some of these things like caffeine, and actually this, I think most people, or a lot of people, have this relationship with alcohol, where it's just, that's what you do. And so you don't think, okay, I'm choosing to drink a cup of coffee at 7 a.m. That's just what you do. Yeah. And having a glass of wine or what have you, that's just what you do. But then the sort of, these little programs that are running in your kind of, like the habits, the programs, the software that's running on your mind, on your physiology, can be deprogrammed and uninstalled. And I think kind of that's what's interesting about what you're saying is that this sort of moment, literally 10 years ago. In fact, you're coming up to your anniversary.
Yeah, I am. I was just realizing that with you saying the date.
Yeah, well, I noticed that this morning. I thought, yeah, so I'm going to come back to that. But so 10 years ago, you had this moment of clarity where Tony Robbins calls time out on all your bullshit and says, what are you playing at, guy? You're going to end up in a ditch in 20 years' time. And you took his advice and you applied it, and now you're 10 years on. So I'm curious to see, looking back as of today, what's the big lesson you learned in those 10 years?
I think there's kind of a few, isn't there? I mean, you've got to understand your why. Your purpose is probably a key one, because I think what Tony did for me that day as part of the Dickens process was give me a clear why. You know, it's always easiest to take the path of least resistance, isn't it? And it's easy to have a glass of wine on a Monday because it's been a bit of a rough day. And then, well, the bottle's open, so I better have, you know, it's a shame to waste it. It was nice wine. So I'll have some on Tuesday as well. And he gave me some clear, you know, he just forced me to make some decisions that I hadn't been making. And just coming back to that caffeine point, what then becomes, which isn't really going to answer your current question, but I just want to throw it out there. What has really been eye-opening is when you've taken something out, you can then introduce it strategically. Now, I know you're big into your running. Mm. I use caffeine as essentially a performance-enhancing drug. Right. I know that caffeine improves my cycling and particularly my running.
Mm.
It really is bad for my golf, though. Don't mess with caffeine and golf once you've taking it out. That really is not a good thing. But yeah, so you then can use it strategically. So I found that to be really good. But I mean, what are the biggest insights? I mean, I really think it comes back down to you've got to put the most important things in your diary first and delegate everything else. You know, you've got to delegate. It's so, a strategic coach teaches us this. We've got to keep delegating more and more and more. And when you think you can't delegate anymore, you've got to check, because guess what? You can always find some more.
Mm.
And that for me has been the key. And that, as long as you do that in such a way as you're actually giving up the stuff that A, you don't like, and B, you're not so good at, and you give it to people that are better at it than you, and actually they enjoy that. You know, strategic coach talks about that in terms of unique ability, don't they? Mm. You find people that have a different unique ability to you, and you give the stuff that you don't want to do. And, you know, being an entrepreneur is actually about being selfish. Now, people think that selfish is a bad trait, but actually what you're doing by taking that unique ability approach is saying, well, look, really, I'm good at this bit and I enjoy this bit. I don't want to do anything other than this bit. And that is what makes the company great, because that allows, if you just get rid of everything else, you spend all of your time doing that one thing, you can then, and then you find other people and just delegate and delegate and delegate. And I think it's probably those principles that have been the key.
Okay. I'm curious, what is your why? What is your purpose?
What is my why? Why? It's a good question, really. And I think I don't know that I have one single why. I think I have. So when I set out my goals, I break my life down into different roles. So I have one overriding vision for my life, but actually all of my goal setting, I break down into key roles. So I have four key roles in my business life. One is to be an entrepreneur. One is to be a business leader, one is to be a marketeer, and one is to be a financial planner. Now, you'll notice that the financial planner actually came last there. You know, I would suggest, if you asked a lot of business owners, let's take an accountant as an example, what do you do for a living? Their first answer would be accountant. Second answer might be, I run an accounting business. For me, if you own the business and you run the business, then that's got to be your primary role. What you do within the business has got to be the secondary role. So I will have a why and values for each of those different roles. So I suppose my overriding one is to have an amazing life and have an amazing relationship, bringing up my daughters and at giving them the best opportunity I can. You know, I love travel. I love spending time with my family. And so it's got to be, that's really my main calling, is to say, I want to spend as much quality time doing, and it is selfish, you know, ultimately it is selfish, but that is, that's my driver.
It's really interesting because the word selfish, what you've described can be described as selfish. And I think the everyday sort of understanding of the word is selfish is kind of bad. But really what you're saying is you have interests that are bigger than the nuts and bolts of the business, and you're going to try and focus on that for yourself. And this is a nice segue actually into the book, because again, what I'm curious is you've got this sort of moment in time of 10 years ago, and you're now having published a book all about happiness and creating happiness and entrepreneurial happiness, coming from this point where you'd envisioned this unhappy state. And again, I'm curious actually. So number one, the book is fantastic. And
thank you.
Yeah, really, it genuinely is. And there's a whole bunch of stuff in there that's practical and applicable to any entrepreneur. And genuinely, I'm going to start using some of the principles within it for our sales and marketing. The rules concept for my health and diet, I'm definitely going to apply that. And there's a bunch of other stuff in there too. But I'm curious, and because this is a podcast where we're discussing the ups and downs of entrepreneurship, when was the time you were least happy as an entrepreneur?
I tell you when it was, actually, and there's a couple of reasons I think that this was the case. So when I when I was setting up the rural business community, which was the serviced office business, as I said, I was working 9 to 5 on.
Could you describe what the serviced office business is, just for our benefit?
Yeah. So basically, I had moved to a farmhouse, bought the farmhouse. Spent a couple of years renovating the farmhouse. And then on the farm was this big old hay barn, redundant hay barn, lovely old stone barn that was just in rack and ruin. So we wanted to convert that into office for efficient portfolio, but it was way bigger than we needed. So therefore what we did was make it into a really nice serviced office. And we did it slightly differently in that instead of like a lot of the, at the time, in the cities, you could go into, you know, like a Regis and say, I just want a hot desk. But in the countryside, certainly in Rutland at the time, there was nothing like that. It was you rent an office there was nothing communal. So we created the Rural Business Community, which was a hub for small businesses. They could rent a desk for a day a week. Every day a week they could rent a fixed office, and then we'd have like communal events and things like that. And so I was running efficient portfolio. I'd spent all my personal money on doing up the house, and then anything else had gone into the business. Mm-hmm. I'd spent a lot of time focusing on getting, we were able to get EU funding to help us with the development of the barn. So I was spending a huge amount of time doing the grant application for that, then all of the business planning and everything else for that, then finding people to fill it with on top of the efficient portfolio stuff. And I really enjoyed the business planning bit, but a couple of things made me realize that actually I was really unhappy at the point of which I should have been happiest, at the point of which it was like the big unveiling, brilliant, you've done it, it's there, it's live, we've started to, you know, fill it. I was really unhappy. And two things kind of triggered that. One was that I was at a breakfast meeting. I don't tend to do many kind of breakfasty networking meetings for the financial planning business. But I was doing a local one, had been for a little while because of the rural business community. And it was, you know, that was the perfect people to be meeting. And one of these events, we had a speaker that was some sort of coach, can't remember who he was, but he just said something that stuck in my mind. And he said, you know, it's time is a vicious circle. And he said, when you get busy, you stop doing the things that kept you, that de-stressed you, the first things that go. And then, of course, what happens is you get more stressed, you get more busy, and it just ends up getting worse and worse. And I just looked at that and went, John, he's absolutely right. I've stopped playing golf. I've stopped playing squash. And I need to do to reinstall this. And so I just went back to playing a couple of games of squash a week. And even though I was still working the same number of hours, it just allowed me to defrag the brain and kind of sort things out. So that was a key moment. And that was before UPW. But it was just getting back, getting something out there to defrag the brain. And the other thing actually relates to money around the same time, because I put everything into developing the farmhouse and then with the cost of the offices as well, money was just draining out all over the place. And this was around the credit crunch. So we moved from a smaller house to a bigger farmhouse that was worth more money. But because of the credit crunch, I don't know if you remember, but borrowing money as a business owner in the credit crunch was a nightmare. Mm. So even though we were buying a bigger house that was worth more, they would lend us less money. So that kind of drained even more cash. So anyway, I used up every bit of savings that I'd put aside, and then had money on the credit cards as well, just to kind of get me through that period of time. And I started realizing that, you know, a lot of the finance books that I'd read, classic being The Richest Man in Babylon, had always taught me you should, you know, even if you've got debt, you should still have some savings going on. And I'd, of course, stopped every bit of saving, just trying to pay off debt and put it into the development. And I thought, no, I'm going to take this advice. I've been giving this advice for ages, so I'm going to take my own medicine. And I just started saving again, even though I'd still got these credit cards there. And psychologically, those two things, going back to just doing some exercise to defrag the brain and also starting to save some money. Psychologically, even though, you know, I was like saving £50 a month and I'd got 20 grand on credit cards, the two were entirely out of balance. But the psychology of being able to do that made me significantly happier. But that was the time that springs to mind, I think, when I was most unhappy.
That's interesting. So right in that moment, because going back to that point, it must have been pretty hairy when you were credit crunches going on and there's drama all over the telly and you're kind of up to your neck in debt with credit cards and what have you, and you've got all this activity going on and you're just having this dawning realization that you've kind of dug a bit of a hole for yourself. How did that feel, that moment?
Yeah, it's scary, isn't it? Because also what happened was, which I didn't see coming, because I was putting so much mental effort into the rural business community to get that off the ground, I took my eye off the ball with efficient portfolio for a period of time. So obviously I'd mentally banked the fact that was going to continue growing, and actually it went backwards for a year.
Right.
And the daft thing was that it didn't feel like I was putting any less time or any less effort in, but I clearly was achieving less by doing it, because mentally I was doing the rural business community at the time. So it was stressful. But that's what being an entrepreneur is all about. You've got to have, you know, that you're going to have the peaks and troughs, and ultimately if you don't have the troughs, you don't appreciate the peaks. It was pretty dark at times.
Okay, it's interesting, because I think you're right. This is sort of you when you are an entrepreneur and you start doing all these things. And I talk from my own experience. It's on the assumption everything's going to still go well. And like you say, when things start moving backwards, or there's a black swan event like a global pandemic that you can't plan for, and it just happens, you still have to pick up the tab. Like, you're the one picking up the bill at the end of the day. So yeah, that can be quite a dark sort of feeling, and particularly if you're the kind of it's all on you. So what do you feel you learned from that sort of moment in time?
Well, it comes back to those two points, really, doesn't it? In that, firstly, you've got to be happy with your finance from a psychological point of view, because if you're not, it drags you down. That is a real, you know, and it doesn't. The ironic thing is, you don't actually have to change that much. I didn't change that much about my finances. I still had the debt. Mm. I was just chucking a bit of money into an ISA every month. But mentally, it put me in a far better place. So you've got to be master of your money to be truly happy. And then And then also, I think it's that work-life balance and that health piece. And that really, you know, just by playing a couple of half-hour games of squash, it made such a difference to my outlook and my mental well-being. And you know, and now that I do a lot of training, I really see that. You know, I understand, and I don't even just understand its impact on my mental well-being, but I also now understand my its impact on my ability to think better. So, for example, if I want to plan a talk, I will go on a run. And I'll, in fact, the system within the system that I built, which is all the foundation within entrepreneurial happiness, I did that at a half, within the half marathon at a half Ironman event. It was all mentally, I'm just kind of arranging that system while I'm running. It just works brilliantly you know, your brain while you're moving works so well that, I use it strategically now to think.
That's great. There's a book I love called Essentialism, which you may have read. But in Essentialism, there's a line he says where you are the asset. You are the asset. And I think this is something that the entrepreneurs overlook. They're like, yeah, well, I'll work harder because the asset is the business or the money or the customers or the kit or whatever. But actually, if you conk out, or if you're not clear, or if you're spread too thin, all that other stuff falls over. And guess what? All your other personal life stuff falls over too. So it's interesting. Like, I think there's really good practical advice in there for people who are facing scary times right now. Is number one, looking after yourself isn't a thing you do at the end. It's the thing you do at the start.
That's absolutely right. An unhealthy business owner will lead to an unhealthy business. It's absolutely right. You've got to look after yourself first. And actually, the funny thing is, when you started explaining it, I was like, this sounds like the sort of stuff I talk to clients about with regards to their financial planning. You know, you've got to insure yourself because, you know, yeah, you've got to insure the, you know, you insure your mobile phone, you insure your car and you insure your house, but you don't insure your ability to earn an income for the next 20, 30 years and think about how much that is worth. But you're absolutely right. From a business point of view, you've got to be in the best shape you can be. And I know I'm a better business owner now that I am fitter, healthier, happier, and have a better work-life balance.
Well, that's great. And I think one of the things I really like or admire about you, Charlie, is the fact you've brought your passion for health and fitness into your business life. So can you tell us a little bit about the Triathlon podcast and the app that you have?
Yes. So I have, basically, when I got into cycling, I struggled to find the different cycling events that I could join up with. I didn't have a cycling community that I joined. I didn't join a cycling club. So I struggled to find events. And what I'd find is that, you know, I'd be chatting to somebody and they'd say, oh, you need to do the Rutland Cycle. I'm like, well, what's the Rutland Cycle? I've never heard of it. Where do I find that? And there's no one website that lists all of the cycling events. Mm-hmm. And then when I got into triathlon, I found that the running world and the swimming world are exactly the same. You know, there's a website, British Triathlon has some listed. There's other websites that have other triathlons listed. But again, no one place that has them all. And if you're into triathlon, you, by the very nature of it, you're actually into three sports. Well, four, if you can't count the multi-sport version. So you want to know, you want to go off and do, like, I, you know, wanted to do my ultra marathon in Cornwall in January. Obviously COVID prevented that, so I had my staying local ultra instead. But you know, you want to find out all of these different things. So I created of creating the app Triathlon, which is A, about helping you find events, but B, about helping you find other people to train with. You know, if I want to cycle on Friday afternoon and I want to average 17 miles an hour, then it can link me up with other like-minded and like-ability people. And then it's about linking the two to say, well, look, if I'm thinking of entering, well, the Marathon des Sables, because I know that that's what your target, then who can I see that I know that's already interested in that event? Because I'm more likely to sign up to that than Comrades if I know three people doing Marathon des Sables, but I know nobody doing Comrades. So it was all about that. But in your last podcast with Dan Sullivan, he talked about how we've had an opportunity in lockdown to free up time. And that definitely happened for me. I got a load of time back as a result of lockdown. And I thought, do you know what? I want to launch a podcast with some of the amazing triathletes, runners, swimmers, cyclists, coaches, and actually now a slightly wider audience as well. So team players and things like that. And my gut instinct was there's a lot of these people are normally too busy to do this, but they're all sitting at home twiddling their thumbs too. So I'll start. And it's been amazing. We've done over 30 podcasts so far. We're releasing one a week. It's called the Triathlon Podcast. I've now got a professional Ironman as my co-host, a lady called Laura Siddle, or Sid as she's known. And yeah, we've been interviewing some incredible people. The one that we'll release, we're about to release, is Krista Cullen, the gold medal winning Olympian hockey player. We've got, yeah, some of the top Ironmen, some of the top triathletes, but like the coach of the Brownlees as well, and top running coaches and top ultra runners. And it's been absolutely brilliant. Yeah, it was an opportunity to blend, and it's another opportunity to merge fun with business, isn't it? Mm. You know, it's helped me tremendously in my own training. I've absolutely loved interviewing these people that are at the very top of a sport that I am, you know, miles and miles and miles behind in. But I've learned a huge amount. It'll be a great way of promoting the app when we're ready to launch, which hopefully by the time this goes live, the app might even be launched. It's gone into time that I didn't have before. So it's been amazing.
Yeah. One of the themes in the book actually is about fun and fun in business. And in fact, I would just like to congratulate you. I genuinely laughed out loud a few times reading your book.
And it was that the right bits?
Yeah. the right bits. I think you did intend it to be funny. Yeah, it was, but really, it's a great lighthearted view at some kind of serious and important stuff. But I think it's this fun in business. And in fact, I love the fact you've kind of wrapped that into your passion and with the podcast and in your entrepreneurial spirit. That's really great. But as we're sort of edging up towards the end of our time together today, we've covered so much ground and it's been really, really fantastic. But I just want to ask you that the question I like to ask everybody is that if we were speaking to somebody who's perhaps just starting out in business, there's lots of advice out there for entrepreneurs or new entrepreneurs. But what advice should they ignore?
I'm going to give you and answer that question and then caveat it with a follow-up. The advice that they should ignore is that writing down goals is the key to success. And that is somebody that is massively goal-orientated. So writing down goals, I've read lots and lots of books on goals and time management over the years, goals are talked about in that you write them down and, you know, magically they'll happen, or you create a vision board and magically it will happen. No, doesn't happen. So writing down goals is only the first step. The absolute key to success is in the achieving of the goals that you write. Now, you've got to write down the goals. That is the first step. But it's then the systems that you put in place to make sure that you achieve those goals that I believe is the key. I think, I can't remember who said it, but somebody far smarter than me said that goals are for idiots, systems are for winners. And it's the system that you employ to achieve the goals that is actually the key here. And the analogy I give in entrepreneurial happiness is when I was doing my first Ironman, I was doing the marathon at the end of that, and it was only the second time I'd run 26.2 miles at that point, and I was having to do it after 112 miles on the bike and 2.4 mile swim. And so what I did was I employed a strategy called the run, walk, run strategy, which is invented by a guy called Jeff Galloway, amazing American running coach, who actually I've interviewed on the Triathlon Podcast. Brilliant, brilliant guy. And so what I did was I ran for 9 minutes and walked for 1 minute right from the start of my marathon. And some people say, well, that's cheating. You know, you're supposed to run the marathon, not run it and walk it. But They never seem to think that it's cheating when the people walk at the end of the marathon because they're in total bits. So I just spread my walking out over the entirety of the run. But what it does is it works brilliantly, and it's something that you should investigate maybe for the Marathon de Sable, because people associate run walk run strategies with slow running, and I'm not, you know, super quick. I did my Ironman marathon in about 4 hours, I've interviewed a guy called Mitch Phillips, who's done a sub 3 hour marathon using run walk run, and Jeff Galloway himself has done his fastest time using run walk run was 2 hours 16 minutes. So that's a pretty quick marathon time to be using run walk run. But what it did was it did a few things. To start with, at the start of the run, it kept me from running too fast. It kept me from blowing up every 9 minutes because I felt so good. I'd taken on too much caffeine at the start of the run, and I felt so good that I was going to go too fast. And it kept me in check, and it stopped me from blowing up my race. And then later on, when my legs were in tatters, you know, for the last 6 miles, what it did was, it, instead of me thinking, oh, I've got another 6 miles to go and I'm in bits, I'm thinking, oh, I can walk again in 8 minutes. So it's just that opportunity to reassess, reflect, and also it's a great way of reducing your risk for injury. So you're de-risking. And I think that that's the key to goals, is having that system. So I have a system that is born out of principles from Strategic Coach, principles from Tony Robbins, principles from Brian Tracy, from all manner of other sources. And it's essentially a way of taking my 3-year goals and my even longer term goals, my 3-year goals as well, my 1-year goals, then my quarters goals, and breaking the quarters goals down into monthly goals, the monthly goals down into weekly goals. But what it is all in one place. So I can look at my things that I need to do today, and it's in the same place as my quarterly goals and my monthly goals. So I know that everything I'm doing today is taking a step towards those long-term goals, which is really, for me, the key to it, because just bringing back to my attention constantly what's really important. And then it's also about how you deliver that with your team. And so I used to go on Strategic Coach, set my goals, and then expect the team to do whatever they did. And really the power has come from being smart around having everybody in the team, which is now, there's about 20 of us, everybody in the team has their own individual goals, but then we have our overriding company goals, and we apply that same approach. And it's that kind of constant indoctrination. So for example, I send a leadership update once a month. I'll send them a video saying, well, look, this is how we got on. This was our goal last month. This is how we got on. These are our goals this month and this quarter. This is what we need to do. And by the way, and then I link it to our company culture. So each month I'll pick out a standout individual, but link that to our company culture. They did amazingly because of this trait of our company culture. Mm. And that just is a way of constantly indoctrinating those goals and the culture into their lives. Because somebody said to me, and I can't remember who it was, but when, as a business owner, you think you're telling your team the goals too often, but at the point of which you think you can't say it another time, that's the point of which they're starting to get them.
Yeah. I think it's 7 times, isn't it? 7 times you have to say something before people remember.
Yeah, something like that. So so I would say it's building those systems around goals, and therefore the science of achieving the goals is the key, as opposed to just writing them down, which is just the first step.
That's a fantastic piece of advice. And again, like, yeah, the system that gets you to the goal, and just keep doing the system every day, week, month, quarter, year. And yeah, I think whether that's what's interesting, actually, there's a parallel absolutely between the fitness and the business worlds. And really, the idea of getting fit at home and at work is something that perhaps we should all aspire to.
Well, it links back to what I was saying earlier in terms of having those roles. So I've got a role to be fit and healthy. So guess what? I've got quarterly, monthly, weekly goals for that. And I've got, you know, goals to be the best dad and husband. And I've got goals for those. So yeah, you split your life down into your key roles, and then build the goals and the system around it.
Yeah, I love it. That's really fantastic. And a great way to sort of bring our conversation to a close, because I think we've really sort of brought the start of our chat towards the end here. I think there's some amazing insights in there, Charlie. Thank you so much for sharing so openly. And I've got to recommend the book Entrepreneurial Happiness. I think we've kind of learned a whole bunch of really applicable tools today, but I would highly recommend the book. So please check it out. Charlie, if where should people go? Where should people find out more about you?
The best place is, well, the two resources really are, three, I suppose. Efficientportfolio.co.uk is my financial planning business. You can download a free copy of the whole book of Dream Retirement and also of Smart Money. You can also download the first three chapters of Entrepreneurial Happiness. My publisher won't let me give away any more than that. but you can download all of those from efficientportfolio.co.uk. There's some resources at charliereading.com that link into entrepreneurial happiness. So for example, the tool I use to build, the system I use to build all of my goals in, you can download for free from charliereading.com. And then if you're more interested in listening to the podcast, that's obviously on all the usual podcast channels, but the app and the list of podcasts that we've got are all on tribeathlon.com. So that's tribe. Athlon as opposed to triathlon. So yeah, those are the three best places to find me. I'm all over social media as well, to a certain extent. So you can find me there too. But yeah, those are the best sources.
Tweet him, Instagram him, Facebook him. He's everywhere.
Yeah, I'm not very good on Twitter actually. I think that seems to be a good way of draining a lot of my time. So I choose to take Twitter with a pinch of salt, but yeah, the rest of them I'm normally okay.
Okay, don't tweet him. I'll take that. but do get on social media and check him out. I'm going to put all those links in the show notes, and really please follow that up, because he's got a whole bunch of great stuff going on. Charlie, thank you so much for your time. Really appreciate it. Great to see you, and hopefully I'll see you for a run when we're allowed to meet up.
I'm looking forward to it, Dan. It's been an absolute pleasure, and great work on setting the podcast up. I think it's a great theme. And, you know, ultimately, I think one thing I was just going to say to you on the subject of your podcast, I think it's so important, because ultimately success comes from experience, doesn't it? Mm. But where does experience come from? It comes from failures. So absolutely brilliant. Well done. And it's been an absolute pleasure.
Well, thank you. And I have to say, this is true. Your podcast was an inspiration for me and to get mine together. So thank you for doing that. So keep up the good work, and I shall see you soon, mate. Take care.
Cheers.
If you want to receive the top 5 tidbits, the nuggets, the insights from each episode in your inbox every week, head up to honeyibluewupthebusiness.com. Yes, the snappily titled honeyibluewupthebusiness.com. And enter your email address, and we're going to get the best bits. We're going to collate them together, and we're going to send them to you, so you don't have to write them down when listening to the podcast. Yes, nice and easy. So get up there, enter your email address, get the tips, all good. And I've got to say before I go that this podcast is generously supported by my company, The Tech Department. Thank you, guys. They are indulging me as I'm pursuing this little creative project. If you want to find a company that helps make your technology better, so that gets your business better as well, head up to thetechdept.com. So on behalf of everybody here, thanks for listening. See you next time.